you're Mike Rutherford of Mike and the Mechanics, who we all definitely know his name or anything about Mike and the Mechanics. 2 weeks ago when we first talked about this service in staff meeting and I said I wanted to preach about deep time, Rebecca asked me, have you heard about the deep time walk? Jack sent it to me. And in case you still don't understand what deep time is, or if you came in after Jack's story, or like maybe like me, Jack didn't send it to you, just to your co-pastor. Deep time refers to the concept of time on a geologic scale. Thinking, for example, about how the Earth existed for almost a billion years before there was any life on it at all. Or how after those first single cell, The first single cell life forms took shape, it was another 3 billion years before anything thought to have more than one cell. These are the kinds of things you would think about on a deep time walk. It's a kind of meditative experience of deep time, a slow, reflective walk of just under 3 miles, which the app suggests you should take in a beautiful natural setting. 4.6 kilometers, which spans Earth's 4.6 billion years. A chance to take in the enormity of time and to find peace with my place in it. At least that is how I imagine it, because after Rebecca forwarded me the link, which she got from Jack and I didn't, I downloaded the app, put it on my to-do list, and I never, ever took that walk. I kept wanting to. Certainly more than, like, a lot of things on my to-do list. More than, say, clearing the print log from the office computer to see if that would make it print again. It didn't. It sounded so relaxing, so meaningful, but other things were always more pressing. And I figured once I took care of the pressing things, then I would do the meaningful ones. But that never happened. There are lots of things like that for me. I hate to see them on Monday mornings when I make my new list for the week. The things that I don't get to check off, but I have to just cross off. Things I didn't get to while they still could have been helpful. Or the things that I transfer from list to list, week to week, until I finally admit that it's never happening and I just leave them off the next one. I think the deep time walk is supposed to remind you that even the longest human life is just a summer fling in the grand scheme. Or not even that, a quickie under the bleachers. A drop in the bucket. To remind you that that was really for the confirmation class that never showed up. So in that sense, I guess like putting it on my to-do list and not checking it off for 2 weeks accomplished the same goal. But I also could have just read a single line from the book of Ecclesiastes, my favorite book of the Bible from like ages 10 to 20-something. This part's right at the beginning. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. I could have just listened to Gilead's treasurer, Tammy Besser, who after a recent trip to the Grand Canyon declared something like, God doesn't love people, God loves rocks. Something like that. Okay. Rocks have been around for so long, and they get millions or billions of years to become the beautiful things they were created to be, diamonds or Grand Canyons. If we're lucky, we get 4,000 weeks to figure out what to do with. That's the title of Oliver Berkman's new book, and the subtitle is Time Management for Mortals. Berkman was a connoisseur of time management fads, the 4-hour work week, inbox zero, all those ways that people devise to try and squeeze a little more time out of their time. Daunted by the recognition of his own brevity, frustrated by every crossed-off item on his list, he chased after all the bullet journals and time-tracking apps that promised just a little more productivity out of that sand through his hourglass. Until one day, on a park bench in Brooklyn, he realized none of it worked. And none of it ever would. Sure, they might make him more efficient for a while. He might check off a few more items, but none of that addressed the underlying issue that his time was limited. And none of them helped him get past all the urgent things to the important ones. Actually, he found that efficiency was a trap, that it created more work, enough to fill in any time he gained. No matter what he tried, no matter how he structured his 4,000 weeks, there was never, ever any more of it. I spent 5 hours of the time I was not taking a deep time walk listening to his book. Again, I could have just read a little of Ecclesiastes. I, the teacher, applied my mind to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. I saw all the deeds that are done under the sun, and see, all is vanity and a chasing after wind. The teacher tests out, like, every way they can think of to stretch their time, seeking after wisdom and toiling in hard work, becoming a famous leader and pursuing pleasure and enjoyment, and over again, they all fail. They don't add up to anything until finally the teacher realizes on a park bench in Brooklyn, all is vanity, arrogance, thinking they can get more time, chasing after wind. It's a grim book, a grim view of life, that no matter what we do, we are stuck with an almost inconsequential amount of time to do it in, or not even almost inconsequential, totally inconsequential on the scale of eternity, on the scale of 4.6 billion years, and it's grimmer for being true. So what do we do with that? My original plan for the sermon was to turn here and assure you that God holds it all. The way Paul does to the church in Philippi, he tells them, I'm confident of this, that the one who began a good work in you will bring it to completion. In other words, that God would take all of our incomplete to-do lists, gather up all of our half-finished business, and make something of it. That we can be at peace with only ever getting to a fraction of what we'd hoped, because God, in God, it will all add up. I had this piece I was going to do about the etymology of the word perpetual, since after the service we're electing people to serve on our leadership team, which 5 years ago got named the Perpetual Dance Party for a reason that we apparently find sufficient to keep forever. And anyway, I found out that word at its root means rushing forward, which seems like the opposite of perpetuity, of something continuous, eternal. But it turns out that eternity, that perpetuity itself, is made up of all of our rushing forwards. That's what I was going to say, which I thought sounded pretty good, and I was sorry to have to let it go. I had this read of the part of the Bible where Jesus says, with the faith of a mustard seed, you could move a mountain, and how maybe it means that if each of us believed it was enough to move even a mustard-sized rock, then together over time it would add up to a mountain, that whatever little acts of love we manage to accomplish in our inconsequential span, that they get heaped up and multiplied, that God gives them consequence, was what I was going to say. That's where Ecclesiastes ends. After all the grim truth, it says, the end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep God's commandments, for that is the whole duty of everyone. In other words, sure, your life is meaningless, short, and no matter what you do, it's chasing after wind, but don't think about that. Just obey the rules and leave it to God. Most people think that line got added later. It doesn't really sound like the same teacher. It sounds like some pious person who was disturbed by all of that grimness and decided to lighten the mood by reminding the readers, God's got this. And I don't actually think they're wrong. I do believe God gathers it up. I do think the mustard seeds add up, that faithful people dancing one night at a time can make of life a perpetual dance party, if you're able to back up far enough. If you can see it on a geologic scale, if you think about it on your deep time walk. But who has the time? Who can zoom out that far or keep all of that in mind? I can't. You guys made it. Amazing. No, there's probably good parts coming. Who has the time for a deep time walk? Who can zoom out that far or keep all of that in mind? I can't, not for long. Now when I'm adding and checking and crossing things off the list, I don't think it's untrue, but it does seem unhelpful in the moment. Like it may soften the edge of the bleakness to know that like somehow, some way in eternity, it adds up to something. But maybe the bleakness is the point. You guys arrived in time for the bleakness. That's what Berkman says. Like the teacher in Ecclesiastes, he thinks the only real way forward off that park bench in Brooklyn is to face into our finitude, to live what he calls the limit-embracing life, to tell the truth about it, to know that we will never, ever get to the end of our to-do lists, and to understand that that means we will have to choose what to actually do, to level with ourselves that, as he says, I am going to end up neglecting huge numbers of things that matter, and to choose a few things to not neglect and give our lives to them eyes open. So I didn't end up taking a deep time walk, but I did end up doing something kind of like a deep time walk last week when I wasn't taking the real one. My family and I went to the Field Museum, and we found ourselves at the Evolving Planet exhibit, which starts 4.6 billion years ago. I can't tell you what happened on Earth then, because when I tried to read the placard, Nola tugged me forward a few hundred million years. Like a billion years in, Rochelle and I tried to interest her in the structure of a eukaryotic cell. She basically didn't slow down until the Carboniferous period. There's a 3-foot-long millipede-looking thing there that she likes to pet. From there, we only stopped at things with giant teeth or claws. And then the hominins, she knows I like. But after she had put her hand into the bronze cast of the Neanderthal's hand, she was basically done. A downhill slope through the last 40,000 years. And in the end, maybe that's more helpful than a meditative walk, taking in the whole of the Earth's story, giving me a sense that I could ever get my mind around the enormity of it. Maybe it was better to do that breathless gallop through 4.6 billion years in 20 minutes, to be pulled on despite my desire to slow down and figure out what's really going on, to have the sense that I'm missing out on so much, that I'm neglecting lots and lots of important things. Maybe it's better to face the fact it will always be this way, to reckon with the grim and bracing truth. I only have time to check off a few items. Which will it be?